thank you so much for joining me today. My first question out of the box, what were the stories that inspired you as a young writer?
Just all kinds of stories, comic book stories, what?
Were there certain authors in particular that inspired
you? Oh, yeah. I read a lot of science fiction, fantasy. Frederick Brown, Robert A. Heinlein, Clifford D. Simak, then into Harlan Ellison. I read comics. I didn't know people wrote comics. There weren't credits. So I kind of thought maybe there was a machine up in New York that someone pushed a button and comic books came out. It wasn't until later I realized that they were actually written and drawn by people. So I didn't really have any favorite names because I didn't know the names.
Who were some of the mentors in your life that pushed you in the direction that you're in now?
Again, mentors, what, like teachers, writers?
Yeah.
What?
Were there certain ones in particular that brought you to where you are today?
They're so varied. Yeah, they say everyone that I read. I don't know if there was anyone outside of the, you know, writing that would put me to where I was. But I guess I was pretty much affected by everyone I encountered in one way or another.
Well, a more specific question then. What was it like to write for Marvel before Marvel was this giant corporation? What were those days like?
Oh, okay, it was wonderful. It was wonderful to write. we had a lot more freedom. It was important to sell comics, but they were selling pretty well anyway, so we had a lot more chance to do things that were maybe taking a little more risk. And we weren't forced into writing like arcs that fit into trade paperbacks and stuff that was more commercial.
Did you ever run into issues of censorship? Did you ever run into that problem of a very conservative atmosphere and kind of the response to how some books were received?
Not really. I mean, the Comic Code Authority was still in effect. We still had to have that little seal on the covers. But, I mean, it was... I remember when we came up with the idea of doing an alcoholism storyline in Iron Man. And we took it to Jim Shooter, who was the editor-in-chief of the company. We asked him, we told him what we wanted to do, and he just said, do it well. You know, it was risky, and it was controversial, but all his only instruction was make it a good story. So...
How much freedom did you have as a writer to bring your own sensibility to the product? Was there ever a problem where you say, I want to go in this direction, and they go, no, we actually have it all mapped out, we don't want that? How much freedom did you have to be creative as a writer?
I had a lot more freedom than they have today, and today a lot is dictated by the companies. No, every once in a while you come up with a storyline, and they say, well, we don't really want you to do that, so you come up with something else. But it wasn't dictated, okay, I have to do this, then you have to do that, and then you have to fit in with this, then you have to take note of that. It was actually a lot of freedom.
I wanted to ask you about the process of adaptation. In looking at your body of work, I came across some stuff that you did that I don't think a lot of people are aware of. You adapted Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom into a comic book. You adapted Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade into a comic book adaptation. And, of course, you also wrote the comic book adaptation of Kroll, a favorite of so many people. What is that like? Is the screenplay presented to you? Are you allowed to see an early cut of the film? Like, what is that process like?
Well, the process when I did those was basically you're given a copy of the screenplay. And you adapt it into X number of pages. It's easier in some ways because you don't have to worry about the plot. The plot's right there. You just follow the plot. It's difficult in that there are never enough pages to do the whole story. So you have to cut things that you think aren't absolutely necessary. And for me, I tried to use whatever dialogue I could, use as little of my own words, because I figured the people are buying the comic. This was before home video. And the people buying the comics didn't want to hear what I had to say. They wanted to see the movie again. And so I gave them as close to the movie as I could.
When you're writing for Spider-Man, there's a great deal of supporting characters that you created to add to that world there. Did you ever have a say in terms of how much you're allowed to push those characters versus the ones that kind of go to the sidelines and only are available in one or two issues?
No, I don't think I was ever told you can or can't do such things with the characters. I just came up with ideas and I would present them to the editor. And if there was a slight problem of like, well, they don't think that would fit or whatever, we would discuss it. But I was never really told, no, you can't do anything with the characters. They just kind of let me go and do what I wanted to, and they liked it. So,
what's it like having Stan Lee as a boss?
Well, true believer, I guess it's... I only met Stan once. Mostly by the time I was writing, he was Mr. Presents, used to call him, because Stan Lee Presents, but he really didn't have anything to do with the day-to-day running of the comics companies. He was more involved in California and extraneous elements of, like, the movies, TV, licensing, and so forth.
When you first created Venom, was there a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde inspiration with the character? Because it does play like a little bit of the Robert Louis Stevenson character. I was curious if that was a factor in the format of the character.
Not a conscience reference, no.
Okay. Just curious. What were the early days like when you created Venom? This character has now, you know, for so many reasons, come back into pop culture. I don't think he ever went away, but obviously now the attention to the character is so intense, and it's wonderful that people are looking at your work and rediscovering your work. In the early days of Venom, was he ever a hard sell?
No, not really. About the only thing, when I presented it to editor Jim Salakrup, the only thing he said, and I just recently learned that this came from above, was that the character that I had been establishing and teasing in Web of Spider-Man was female, and they wanted it to be a male. So I came up with a different, with Eddie Brock and his background. But what, I don't remember anybody saying, no, you can't do this, can't do that. They just kind of gave me a lot of freedom, let me go.
The character has a wonderful sense of humor, and it certainly it comes across. It seems like you also have a very fiendish sense of humor that you're funneling through this character. One of my favorite cliffhangers is there's an issue that ends where Venom addresses the reader directly and goes, "If you don't buy the next issue, I'm going to eat your dog," which is wonderful.
I don't remember that. I don't know if that was one of my stories, but it sounds like Venom. Yeah.
Was there ever a struggle in terms of, the character is very frightening, but he's also really funny. Was there ever a decision to make him one or the other, or was it always a decision consciously to make him kind of the darkly humorous villain?
I don't know if I made a lot of conscience decisions about the personality. It just came out from the situations. I mean, the guy's nuts, and it's fun to write a guy who's just nuts, and that came out in the writing and the dialogue.
What is the timeline like for you when you're creating just a single issue? What kind of time do you have in terms of what the pitch is and the deadlines? What is that like for you?
Well, in an ideal world, you would probably have a couple of weeks to do a plot. But if you're late, if you take too much time, it takes away from the people coming next. So if I took 3 weeks, then the person coming next to me, the penciler, who had 2 weeks, then just has a week. So all in all, it takes a month, ideally, to do between the writer, the penciler, the inker, the letterer, the colorist, and the best of all possible worlds.
Where did Carnage come from? The creation of the character, how did you conceive of Carnage? There's a wonderful accomplice to Venom in some ways.
There were certain characteristics that Venom had that were kind of subtle, and a lot of people didn't realize them. And one of those was he had a strong sense of morality, of ethics. A sick, twisted, psychotic sense of ethics, but one nonetheless. And it was so sick, because he was so over the top, a lot of people missed it. So I wanted to create a character who had absolutely no conscience, no ethics, no morality at all, a sociopath, so I could contrast that to, look, they're different. He cares. He's insane, but he cares. This one doesn't care. So that was why I came up with Carnage.
There have been so many different spin-offs of Venom and Carnage, and some of which haven't been written by yourself. What are the ones that you've liked? Are there any that stick out to you that you go, that's a really good example?
I haven't read any Venom stories other than my own. It's not from ego. It's just that, you know, it's not what I would have done, even if it's wonderful. And I wouldn't have never sent him into space. I would have never made him Flash Thompson. I would have never given him guns. And there may be great stories. A lot of people liked them. But it's not my Venom, so I just haven't read them.
Do you feel the same way about the film adaptations, that it's not yours, so you feel kind of removed from that?
It's always different, anything from written word to movies. They're different media. And I understand that. And, you know, the movie people do the best they can, and if it's entertaining, that's fine with me, even if it isn't my own, strictly my character.
Were you happy with how Spider-Man 3 turned out, or what were your thoughts on that?
I think they did a decent job. They couldn't reference any of the Marvel stuff. I hated Peter Parker and his Saturday Night Fever mode. And I hated the fact that he smacked his girlfriend, or his wife. I guess it's his girlfriend then, even though it was unintentional. A hero doesn't do that. So it wasn't a favorite.
To go back to the comic book specifically, what are some of your favorite stories that you've crafted over the years? Like the ones that are available in the Omnibus collections or just central issues? Like, what are some that we should look at?
Well, I like the origin story that is Amazing 300. I think that set the character up very well. And one of the other things that I wanted to establish about Venom was that Venom as an entity existed only to kill Spider-Man. They formed the Venom, the symbiote and Eddie Brock came together as Venom to kill Spider-Man. I did a story where they thought they had succeeded. And at that point, Venom ceased to exist. It became Eddie Brock, and the symbiote was his, like, Aloha shirts on an island, his costume, and Venom no longer existed because his main reason for existing no longer existed. Of course, he found out that Peter Parker was still alive, and Venom came back, but I like that story because it established something that I thought was very important.
It's interesting that there is, it really is a moral story. And I really love that about this aspect of choosing between good and evil, and not really necessarily even allowing there to be a gray, but it is between good and evil. It is, you could even say, would you say rather, that Venom is he's like the enabling evil id of Eddie Brock in some ways.
Well, yeah, he's Eddie Brock in the comics was mentally ill. I mean, he had gone through this trauma of having what he thought his life was destroyed, his existence with reason for existence. But even though he was strong, he was a weight lifter, he couldn't go after Spider-Man. Venom allowed this, so I guess that made him the symbiote, an enabler for both the symbiote and Eddie Brock's hatred of Spider-Man.
Kind of an odd question, but I want to ask it. My brother used to torture my mother with a Venom action figure that he had. Mm-hmm. He pushed a little button on the back and says, "I want to eat your brain." So I guess I've always wanted to know why. Why is there a cannibalistic aspect to Venom?
I think it came from zombie movies, you know, where zombies eat brains, and he's nuts. I mean, you got to be nuts to want to eat someone's brain. And I thought, well, okay, this will be a good punishment. I'll eat your brain. Because he's nuts, that's all.
He's terrifying to look at. Was there a softer early version? Were there different variations that you, before you decided on the final design?
The final design was by Todd McFarlane, based on my description. And mostly my description was that he was a big guy, muscular, a weightlifter. And I think when I first described him, when Venom met or encountered, when Mary Jane encountered him, I called about his start as this mini-tooth smile, and that it kept growing till it almost connected in the back of his head. And that was pretty much, each artist has brought something to it. Todd, you know, made it look the original way. Eric Larson gave him a 40-foot tongue. And, you know, each editor, gosh, look at the covers these days. He's like, you know, 800 pounds with, you know, a mouth big enough to swallow a planet. So, yeah, it's a lot of interpretations from different artists.
When I look at the character, he doesn't, certainly in the early issues, he doesn't look like Topher Grace. He doesn't look like Tom Hardy. Was there an actor or a personality who was modeled on, either in personality or in the way he looked in terms of creating the look of Eddie Brock?
Visually, I don't know. You have to talk to Todd. I know Todd has said he thought that the creature was going to be an actual monster, not a guy, not a human-shaped guy. So he had other designs. I haven't seen them. But there was no conscious effort on my part to make him sound or act like anyone else. Just I kind of went with the character that I thought and let him grow organically.
What are some of the more interesting fan responses you've received over the years of people who've read your work and received your work?
I'm constantly surprised to find, like, 9 and 10-year-old kids come up and tell me that Venom and Carnage are their favorite characters. They're psychopaths. They're evil. But, okay, you know, I'm glad people like them. That's about it. People just love these characters. Okay, that's a good thing. So.
As so many people have grown up to love your work and been inspired by your work, what would you say to a young person who says, I want to be a comic book artist, I want to be a comic book writer, I want to work at Marvel? What would you say to them?
I'd say don't give up your day job. It's a contradiction. It's very much more difficult now. I got in 1973, and it was much easier to make a living in comics. These days it's very difficult. Because the sales are down, page rates are cut, jobs are few. On the other hand, there is so much more opportunity to get published and self-publishing, crowdfunding, online publishing. So it's a lot easier. I'd say, you know, talk to a lot of people. Talk to the artists here. Find out how they're getting published. If you get published, you can get a credit. If you get credit, you get credibility. You also get samples. So, you know, start small, do what you can, do the best you can, learn from your mistakes, and then try to go up the ladder to a point where you're making money at it.
Do you prefer the days when Marvel Comics, their characters would be discovered strictly as a comic book character? How do you feel about this world we live in now, where Marvel is such a television and film entity that some people are forgetting about the comic books?
Yeah, I miss the old days. It's like, the movies and TV are affecting comics. The comics are actually altering to be more like the movies. And then we're not doing comics. We're doing movies with pictures, you know, with pages and drawings. So, yeah, I'd like for comics to be the mover rather than the follower, but that's not what's going to happen.
How do you feel about the success of the recent Venom film? It's so successful, and apparently they're planning a slew of sequels. Did you like the film? Did you see it?
You didn't. I read your review. I thought it was okay. I thought it was, bottom line, I thought it was entertaining. I had some big logic gaps. But it was okay. It was entertaining. These days, if I pay $10 to see a movie and it entertains me, I'll settle. You know, I'd love to have a great movie, but I'll settle for a decent one.
Of the recent dozens and dozens of comic book movies, just on your own opinion, were there ones in particular that you thought got really right? Did something you enjoyed recently?
I loved the very first Iron Man movie.
Yeah.
I thought they nailed that. I thought Robert Downey Jr. was fabulous. I liked the Ant-Man movie. It was a great even mixture of action and humor. And they got the human element of Scott Lang and his daughter, which I think was vital to the comic. They got that in the movie. The first Avengers movie was a lot of fun. Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, the word fun. I think that what makes a successful movie to me. So those are a few I've liked.
With the monster success, monster being the pun appropriate, with the monster success of Venom, do you find that you're able to create and add to this character, or is there a pressure from a corporate standing to make it into something specific?
I don't know. I have nothing to do with corporation. I think they changed Eddie Brock, made him a good guy from the start, and that's just necessary because you can't base a franchise on a psychotic murderer. So they had to make the changes. I think they're doing what's good for the movies. I think they're doing what's good to make money, and that's what they're in business for. But as long as I get to write my comics and do what I want and the way I think it works, that's fine.
What have you worked on recently that you want to tell us about?
I did an 8-page Venom story for the latest Venom annual. But now I've got a couple of Kickstarters going. There's one called, I'm doing with a character called The Living Corpse, which has been around for 10 years, independent. And it's called The Hex Files. It introduces a new character called Mac Hex. That we got our crowdfunding, our Kickstarter goal within 24 hours. So that was pretty good. That's supposed to come out in January. And then I got another Kickstarter with I did a series for Epic Comics, Marvel, in the 80s called The Boz Chronicles, which is creator-owned. There's another publisher that wants to do new stories, so hopefully we're going to do some new stories with that.
Thank you. Do I have any questions for David Michelinie? Anybody any questions?
I'll give a dollar to someone with a question.
All right. Well, David, thank you so much for speaking with me. This is a huge highlight, and everybody was looking forward to it. And please go to David's booth. He's here for the rest of the day. Yes, please give it up for David Michelinie, everybody.
Thank you very much.